Next item on the agenda is item 13, proposal to Chapter 4 VAC 26-2010 pertaining to summer flounder, revise the limit, size limit for commercial hook and line gear. Adam, before you start to sway this a little bit, I'm trying to clear up. All right, sir. Proceed.
This is a public hearing for amendments to Chapter 620 pertaining to summer flounder to modify the minimum size limits in the commercial hook and line fishery for summer flounder. This is an issue that's come up quite frequently over the last few years. It's come up even more frequently to the agency this year. What we currently have in the recreational fishery is a 16.5-inch minimum size limit. In the commercial fishery, we have 14 inches minimum size limit. What's happening is we have people fishing in the same areas, fishing for the same species, fishing with similar gear types, and they're bound by two completely different size limits. This 14-inch minimum size limit that you see in the commercial fishery was originally established based on the majority of our commercial landings. Most of our commercial landings are caught offshore in trawl vessels off the coast of New Jersey. That's where that 14 inches comes from, because that's generally the size they catch, and there's an 80% mortality in any fish discarded from that trawl. So that's why that 14 inch persists in that commercial fishery so small. When you look at something like hook and line gear, whether it's recreational or commercial, you drastically reduce that mortality on caught fish. It comes down to just about 10%. As I said, this is not a new issue. It's come up quite a bit. In 1994, when the commercial hook and line was originally established, this was something that came up at the task force. It came up again in 2000 in a request from the CCA. It was brought back to the commercial hook and line task force. January 2010, it was brought to FMAC. Again, in November 2010, it was brought to FMAC. Each time, all these committees chose no actions on this item. This is the first time that it's been in front of the commission. We received enough from it that we thought it was important to bring to the commission today for a public hearing. We did bring it most recently back to FMAC in August 2019. They made a motion that they were adamantly against any changes to commercial hook and line minimum size limits. At that time, they cited that they didn't think it was a problem with the species. They thought it was more of a problem in perception between user gear types, recreational and commercial. They also believed that there wasn't a lot of biological benefit to changing it as well. You heard Jill earlier today talk about how we expanded our commercial landings. We are part of a coast-wide stock, which is all the way up and down. I said just a minute ago, most of our landings are taken off the coast of New Jersey. We hold back about anywhere from, 10 years ago, 300,000 pounds, to most recently we hold back 100,000 pounds, specifically for our bay fishery. Unfortunately, even though the stock is not overfished, overfishing is not occurring, we have a very different picture of what's happening here in the bay jurisdiction. You can see on the left here, you're looking at commercial harvest over the last 10-plus years. We used to be upwards around 250,000 pounds, and you can see a precipitous drop in not only catch, but also effort and catch per unit effort in that commercial harvest. You're also seeing it mirrored over here in the right in the recreational harvest. We used to be up 600,000, 700,000 pounds, and now we're down closer to 100,000. So we're seeing a precipitous drop in these fish that are caught in the Chesapeake Bay, regardless of what that coast-wide assessment is saying that we can expand the quota. To give you a little background about the commercial hook and line license, it was established in 1994 by the Commercial Hook and Line Task Force. We do limit it to 200 individuals, so it's not a fishery that can get out of hand. They do have a minimum of 1,000 pounds of seafood sales that they need to have each year It doesn't necessarily need to be using that commercial hook and line gear. They could go out blue crab, they could go out an oyster, but they do need to be an active commercial waterman selling at least 1,000 pounds of seafood on an annual basis in order to maintain that commercial hook and line license. A little bit of closer look, even though we have 200 participants for that fishery, only about, we'll say, just over 100 are active using commercial hook and line gear in any year. Of those 100, you can see maybe around 40 of them are actually harvesting summer flounder as part of their catch. Over the last 3 years, they catch about 15,000 pounds of summer flounder by commercial hook and line gear. We only harvest about 30,000 pounds in the bay, so it's just over half of the total harvest in the Chesapeake Bay, but accounts for almost 20% of everything caught by that commercial hook and line. We have a biological sampling program that the agency runs that goes out into the places of business and actually measures these fish for length, weight, and age information. Based on that information, over the last 10 years, if you look at the bottom, I know there's a lot of numbers on here, but about 53% of the fish that are taken in this fishery are under 16.5 inches. 16.5 is that recreational limit that we are proposing to move this. 14 inches of that commercial. So 53% over the last 10 years are fish under 16.5 inches. And if you look at the last 3 years specifically, that number's grown from 53% to just about 60%. So we are concentrating more and more on those smaller fish as that's what's available. It came up on whether or not this was any kind of biological conservation. We don't have a stock assessment scientist on staff, so all we have to go is the coastwide assessment. We do know, based on information from that assessment, I'll walk you through these graphs real quick. A male summer flounder enters this fishery at about 14 inches. When it enters that fishery at about 14 inches, most of it is probably a 1 or 2 year old based on this. 96% of those fish are sexually mature. So as soon as they come in at 14 inches, they're all sexually mature. We have the ability to take them right out of the population. If we hold off and let them grow from 14 inches up to 16.5 inches, you can see that those fish grow to maybe 4, 5, or even 6 years old, maybe even more sometimes. So that's 2 to 3 years additional that they have to spawn. So that's just kind of a walkthrough that there is a biological benefit. There is increased spawning with allowing them to grow from 14 inches up to 16.5 inches. And that's mirrored in the females as well. Most of them enter the fishery about 1 year old, and if they're allowed to grow to 16.5 inches, they do get 2 or 3 more spawning years out of them before they get removed from the population. I'll just kind of guide you to the changes in the regulations so you can see them. If you look at page 14 of your evaluation or page 6 of your regulation, you can see up top we established the 14 inches for commercial gear, and then we come back in here and reference this section and say it's 16.5 specifically for hook and line gear caught commercially. As a side note, we do strike this down here because with the new language, it becomes a little repetitive in regulation. So that would be the only change that we are proposing to make today. This has been advertised in accordance with the Code of Virginia. Staff has received 3 public comments, written public comments to date. I believe I gave them to you before. None of the 3 are in support of this motion. Those are the only 3 that staff has received to date on this. So staff is recommending that the commission amend Chapter 4, VAC 620, pertaining to summer flounder, to modify the minimum size limits for the commercial hook and line gear from 14 inches to 16.5 inches.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from Mr. Kenyon by members of the commission? 1, I can't keep up with all the regulations because the numbers are slightly. Commercial hook and line is required to catch 1,000 pounds in order to maintain?
For the commercial hook and line license, if you are one of the 200 people who have that, in order to maintain that license year after year after year, you have to report to our mandatory harvest reporting system 1,000 pounds of seafood sales. So that can be made of blue crabs, it can be made of oysters, all years.
2 years.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
2 years.
Well, so you talk, yeah. Anyway, I just want. It wasn't a trick question. I just could not remember that. But thank you.
You're welcome.
Questions, Mr. Kenyon? All right, sir. Thank you. This is a public hearing. Anyone wishes to be heard on this matter? Go ahead. Come first, sir. And keep in mind, if it's on your mind, you cannot ask. Just a sort of heads up. You can't ask a gentleman if he's caught, a lady, if they caught 1,000 pounds of fish. It's against the law. We'll give you a heads up.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. My name is Rex Cox. I'm a commercial hook and line fisherman, and I'm very much opposed to this amendment. This is a copy of the summer flounder requirements. I got off the BMRC website. I'd like to read a couple of the paragraphs in here. Paragraph B, the commercial harvest of summer flounder from Virginia tidal waters for each calendar year shall be limited to 100,000 pounds of the annual quota. Okay? That includes gill netters, pound netters, anybody fishing commercially in the tidal waters of Virginia. You scroll down to paragraph E of the same regulation. It says, should the commercial harvest specified in subsection B be projected to be less than 100,000 pounds, any such shortage shall be added to the following landings described in section D above, which is the offshore fishery. So what this regulation will do will not save any fish. You're stopping me from catching it, then you will turn right around and give it to the offshore draggers to catch it at the end of the year. So they're still catching 14-inch fish. All you're doing is saying you can catch it, but you can't. The commercial hook and line fishery, in my opinion, is the cleanest commercial fishery in Virginia with regards to bycatch and discards. So the measure will be taken away from the cleanest fishery and given to a fishery that might not be quite as clean. Where is the logic in that? There's no logic there. It's nothing, in my opinion, but politics and discrimination. Fishery management decisions should be made on scientific facts. There's no scientific data to support this measure, merely politics and perception. Thank you.
Thanks. Who's next? Mr. Dean?
Yes, Jeff Dean again from the FMAC committee. The reason that we voted against this is that anything, as by my experience or I've been told, anything over 15 and a half inches is usually a female. So this put some of the pressure back on the male and take some of it off the female stock. And as I understand it, a male can fertilize more than one female stock's eggs. So that's what we had in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Ludford.
Chris Ludford, commercial fisherman, hook and liner. My mother, my wife have commercial hook and line. My mom couldn't be here today. You can believe she has pretty strong opinions on this, especially when we talk about, you know, the waterman. She's a water woman. She'll tell you that very quickly. I don't understand. I'd ask Mr. Kenyon, why is staff recommending this specifically? Why is staff
Behind
this?
Sir, address.
Yeah. Okay. Commissioner, I apologize.
I think he's made a number of comments why he's recommending it.
Right. But it's 15,000 pounds, you know, and we're hoping to get back. But again, like Mr. Cox said, you know, and I go back on the 300,000 that we've held inshore for years and never caught, and then we give it to the offshore fishery. You know, this is a fish that the restaurants welcome, the buyers welcome. Spot loves a 14-inch fish. You know, I see this once again, unfortunately. You know, and you know, we were together, 2000, that hook and line. I got my card in 94 from that, you know, and that really, you know, imprinted on me the need to become involved in fisheries management. Dr. Neal, you were with us in 2000, you know. We struck that deal on spade fish. There was no science behind spade fish. You know, we didn't fight for the spade fish. We said, oh, we'll go with six spade fish, just leave us the flounder. You know, that was a deal, you know, because all of this is politics and perception. Let's be honest. You know, but please don't do this to us. Please don't do this to the watermen on the Eastern Shore. Please don't do this to the children of the watermen, to the college students, to the high school students that use this to make, you know, money in the summer to augment crab fishing. You know, I'm asking you, please don't do this because right now floundering is slow overall. Once again, right now, the northern states are trying to up their quota. They got nothing else to fish for. They cooked the books back in the 70s and 80s, so they didn't get a great quota on flounder. They want our flounder. These flounder are going to get caught. They're going to get caught in fisheries that aren't cleaner. The Chesapeake Bay Foundation would have to appreciate the hook and line fishery. It's a zero bycatch fishery. We target one fish, we target with a hook. I gill net, so I'm not an anti-gill net guy, but if you're for a no bycatch, a clean fishery, this is it. And the flounder we catch are valuable, sometimes three times more valuable than a trawl or net caught fishery. You know, I put the dark side down on crushed ice. You get a great price from a sushi market. Three, you know, even my wholesaler, my fish buyer, if I care for my fish right, he has another market for them. You know, that's how detail oriented we've gotten into this fishery. It's not a lot of people, but it's worth a lot to a few people. Please don't let a few voices. You know, again, this has come up before and all before. Now, all of a sudden, with the timing, here we are, a month and a half away from an election. I mean, what's the reason? Please don't do that to us. Please don't do it to the people who fish on these fish. They need this fishery. You know, there's no science behind it. I think Mr. Cox made a great point. The fish are going to get caught, just like they do every year. Our quota gets given to the offshore fishery. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Place?
Yes, Kelly Place, speaking as the Director of Research and Policy for the Virginia Watermen's Association. Before you make a decision on equalizing the hook and line size limit, I would urge you to look at all that transpired in the years before, during, and after that was implemented to keep the commercial size limits uniform. It was more than just what meets the eye. To keep the market, all sorts of things that for the market, the fishermen, the value of the fycery, reducing dead bycatch, reducing wasted fish, and a number of things I won't go into since I missed a good portion of this. But I would encourage you, before you make a hasty decision on this, to look at the reasons and look at the past testimony and any past studies, both in Virginia and up and down the coast, of why the commercial size is uniform up and down the coast. And I would say it seems a bit ironic, some of the detractors of this of the fact that the commercial have this size limit in equal with other possibly less sustainable or less environmentally sound fisheries, is so that the hook and line, which is the most sustainable, environmentally sensitive, and less impactful fishery, for the hook and line fishery, which is very small, we're not talking about something that's going to affect the stock and the savings would be inconsequential to any flounder management plan, but to discriminate against this small group renders that fishery less viable. But it's the type of fishery we should be encouraging because there is no bycatch and because, well, you probably know all the benefits of a commercial hook and line fishery. So I do find it ironic that some of the detractors of the current regulation are the very people that often say, oh, if all commercial fishermen caught their fish hook and line, we'd have no problem with it. So there are a whole lot of double standards there as well. So I would encourage you to look at the context within which these regulations were formed and evolved over the years before changing it in that manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. What's next? Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Well, I'm still here. My name is Bill Tice. I've been fishing ever since I could walk, I think. My parents and my grandfather taught me to fish. Now, what I'm looking at is the commercial are fishing, hook and lines are fishing the same way as recreational. So why not just whatever you make for a rule for the size limit for a recreational, roll that into from the hook and line person, commercial wise, into the recreational fund for the amount of catch. And the same, and then that way you won't have people saying, well, that man over there can keep 14 inches and I got to keep 16.5. That way you got it all together and it gives the recreational a little bit more leeway. Thank you.
Thank you. Kelly, you've already spoken.
I have one small thing.
No, sir.
I just wanted to correct something that's vital. But
okay. Who's next? Yes, sir. Come on.
My name is Stan Zimmerman. I'm a recreational fisherman, and I have no issue with a hook and line, commercial hook and line, catching a 14-inch flounder. I do have an issue with a chartered captain who has a group of recreational fishermen on his charter keeping 14-inch flounder when I'm fishing right next to him with my granddaughter or something, and we're throwing 15-inch fish back. And, you know, that's my only issue, that there's a different standard. If that charter is fishing commercially, then I don't have an issue whatsoever. But when you have a six-pack charter and you have six recreational fishermen who charter that boat for $1,000 or $2,500, whatever they're paying for that boat, you know, it costs the same amount of fuel for me to run across the bay to fish at the bridge tunnel as it costs somebody else to run a commercial guy or a charter captain to run his boat across the bay to fish. I don't like the double standard of the charter captain being able to use his hook and line license to keep smaller fish when he's got a recreational charter.
Understood.
Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next? Yes, sir. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Woody Gaskins. I'm from Atchipunga, Virginia, over on the Eastern Shore. And I have a commercial hook and line license that I worked hard to get. I did it the old-fashioned way. In 2010, I entered the delayed entry. 2012, I got my commercial card. And then I worked towards getting that 1,000 pounds of seafood like the requirement says. I was hoping to get one the freeway in the lottery, but that didn't work. So in 2016, I purchased my license. And I pursued this license to supplement my retirement income. I was trying to improve my income. Another requirement of the hook and line is to have a certified crew list on your vessel when you're doing that. And that can be up to 15. 11 of my 15 are recreational fishermen that are only commercial fishing when they're on my boat. None of those have a problem with me commercial fishing. Hook and line is not the only gear type that we share between recreational. You can buy recreational gill net, crab pot, eel pot, and it goes on. The difference is recreational fishermen are fishing for the sport, the pleasure, and for fishing food for their family. The commercial guys are catching fish to sell to make an income. The commercial hook and line license fishermen are the same as any other fisherman. We're selling seafood to restaurants, seafood markets, and I have customers that like fresh seafood and like know where it comes from. 2019, this year, I spent over $400 in commercial license. The recreational person can fishing license is like $17.50 or $48 for a boat license. The flounder fishing is the main reason we're all here today. I would like to see that it would stay the same. I have a good market for flounder in the 14 to 16 inch range, and also have customers that prefer big fish. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Can't see fine. Come on.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Gurley. I'm a commercial hook and line fisherman as well as a charter boat captain license, and I'd like to have staff either address, or I can say I am not allowed to commercial fish and sell my fish if I'm a charter captain. So we can't base that if one person saw somebody doing that. They're not following the regulation as it's written, and I would like staff to confirm that.
We understand that.
Okay, all right. So I just want everybody to hear that.
As long as you're obeying the law.
Exactly.
You can't do that.
Exactly.
Yes, sir.
All right, and I do that. So.
Thank you.
The other thing is I do not support the staff recommendation on lowering of raising the length. I do catch a lot of 14 to the 16. That's a lot that we can catch and sell to make money as a living. So I do not do that. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Who's next? Mr. Barr? Good afternoon, sir.
Mr. Commissioner, Associate Commissioners, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about this matter today. My name is John Barr. I live over on the Eastern Shore in Northampton County. I am here today to speak as a commercial hook and line fisherman concerning the effects of an increase in the size limit on flounder. Fishing for flounder with the current size limits is the very biggest benefit of having a commercial hook and line license. This is a big issue for all of those that hold these licenses who have paid an average of $5,000 to $10,000, as much as $15,000 for one of these hook and line licenses. There are only 200 of these that are allowed by the MRC regulation. These licenses are the lifeline of many of the holders. They depend on the income, especially now in these tough economic times, just to make ends meet. An increase in the minimum flounder size would basically render these licenses worthless, and the hook and line fishery would be finished. I know how important these are to a lot of these fishermen, and with the chair's permission to show the level of importance, I would like to ask all of those that are here today, if you're opposed to this increase, please raise your hand. These are all commercial fishermen. They are commercial fishermen who are allowed to keep 14-inch fish the same as gill netters, pound netters, drag netters, and all other commercial fishermen. The commercial flounder fishery is a quota-managed fishery. There is an inshore quota and an offshore quota. The inshore quota is what covers the commercial hook and line fishery, as well as the pound nets and gill nets. My understanding is that to date, the inshore quota has never been met. And when that is not met, the remaining quota is given over to the offshore quota. And those are always caught. That means that the same amount of flounder are going to be caught, irregardless of who catches them. It appears that a small faction of the recreational side of the fishery feel that it is unfair for someone to use the same gear as they do and be able to keep a smaller fish. They don't understand that the commercial fisherman is trying to earn a living and not just catch something for dinner that night. The recreational fisherman is not dependent upon the income from these fish to feed their family. Some of those people are probably going to be distraught when they go to a restaurant and order a flounder dinner or stop by a market in an attempt to buy some flounder to take home for dinner that night, and they can't get it because the commercial fishermen are the ones that furnish them with these fish. This commission elected in November of 2010 to make no changes to this current regulation.
Mr. Boyd, time is running.
Okay. I'll move right along to, in closing, I'd like to point out that the reality of the situation is that there's no scientific evidence that is showing that this is going to benefit the flounder resource. It will not benefit recreational fishermen because that's set by SMFC. I respectfully ask that your decision today be based not on someone's feeling of unfairness, but on the conversation of conservation of the flounder resource, that you not take away the lifeline of all of these license holders, that you not make these licenses that cost thousands of dollars worthless, and that you not separate the hook and line fishermen from all of the other commercial fishermen by changing the size limits. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Anyone else? Got you next, sir.
Tell
the gentleman, I've got you next. I saw you as well.
I'm next.
No, you're up. Yes, okay. Sir.
Thank you, guys. Yes, just have a couple things.
Your name, please?
James Joseph.
Thank you,
I'm
sir.
A commercial fishing hooking line license. I think we all know what's going on with this thing. It's people that see us catching these undersized fish, put them in the boat, and they get jealous. And they call somebody. I've been called on a couple times and reported to the DNR. And I've been checked every time. And I've always had good fish in the quarter. So it seemed like this committee, I've been down here four times now for the same reason. It seemed like this committee, for some reason, wants to do away with hooking line fishery. I don't know why. This hook and line fishery only catches 0.1% of the flying rate here. And that's a very small quantity of fish. So if you're determined to do away with this fishery, I got one suggestion. Everybody has a hook and line license, grandfathered in. And when you make your changes to what you're going to do, everybody gets a new license now, follows the new regulations. That's the only fair way to do it, if you're going to make changes.
Thanks, sir. Yes, sir.
My name is Frank Daniels, Jr. I have a commercial hook and line license, and everybody said I use them for to supplement my income. And for a small flounder, a lot of my customers can't afford the big flounders. And yes, I got a tax number. I pay tax on all my retail sales. And so everybody else has covered just about everything. But, you know, if you're going to take away my 14-inch fish, you might as well take my license, my boat, my rods, my reel. It'd be useless to me. Thank you.
Can, sir, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
What's the difference in price between a 14.5-inch fish or 14-inch fish and a 16.5-inch fish?
About $5.
About $5? Okay. Thank you.
$5 a pound, a 14-inch fish weighs about a pound, a 16.5, about 2 pounds, or 3/4, something like that.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
My name's Woodrow Malone. I got a commercial hook and line license. And looking around this room and knowing all the hook and line people that I know, I'm 75. I'm like Mr. Joseph just said. I think if you're going to change it up, you should let it. People that's already grandfathered in stay like they are. Because, and another thing, Mr. John asked a while ago how many people were against changing the regulation, and we saw the hands. I'd like to know how many people are for this.
Would they raise their hand?
Nobody. I don't know why they're changing it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Thank you. Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Zeger.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good comments on both sides of the fence here. And, you know, I'm a licensed recreational boat as well. And I've also been on Captain Turner's boat out of Eastern Shore and seen, you know, what's been said here. I've been catching. We're over throwing fish back, and the guy next to us over there is catching the little teeny fish and putting them in the boat. So I feel everything that everybody said on both sides of the fence. But something that nobody's talked about here, we heard the reason why the commercial fishery has 14 inches, because the trawlers, that seems to be what they catch. And so rather than throw them back when they're dead, they keep them. And so we also heard that the fishery is underfished. The quota, we've never made the quota. So instead of talking about messing with the hook and line commercial guys, why don't we reduce the recreational to 14-inch?
I would let staff answer that. I know that, but come on up. Who's?
Under the current plan, it's a coastwide plan. It's 16 and a half. We that would be going against what ASMSC has already established. I don't think we can do that at this time. Thank you.
You'd be out of compliance.
Right.
Mr. France?
Yeah, I see a quota here at 14 inches or a size set at 14 inches. If it's not used, if it goes to 16 and a half inches, the 14-inch fish will still be caught by trawlers. I can't see right now changing anything. It's an underfished fishery, and I think it should stay like it is.
Mr. Tankard?
Yeah, I've been on Captain Turner's boat a many time and watch him in his disgust as he watched others catch these small fish. And his quote, why isn't conservation good for them like conservation's good for me? And I've heard the testimony today about politics and perception. I mean, that's it. When you got a boat sitting beside you catching a small fish and throw it in his cooler, well, you're fishing the same doggone channel, the same doggone rigs, the same rod, and they're able to catch small fish. It doesn't make sense to me. It didn't make sense to Bob Turner. I've had my daughter right beside me catch a nice 16-inch fish. I throw it back, and she says, what happened to that guy over there? Tears in her eyes. I think if you're hooking with, you're fishing with a hook and line, ought to be the same. I mean, you know, I agree. I understand these guys are commercial fishermen, but it seems to me a lot of them are, as they said in testimony, supplementing income. You know, hey, I'm totally for this.
Ms. Lusk?
I think I have to respectfully disagree with Mr. Schenker. I am sympathetic to the fact that the commercial fishermen have invested in a commercial hook and line license, and that is a difference. And similar to what Mr. Francis said, if these fish are going to be caught anyways, I'll have a hard time getting behind this.
Dr. Neal?
I did serve on a couple different hook and line task force with Chris, with Kelly, who's still, he liked to talk back then too. And, you know, we were, and I was on the recreational side, and we were very supportive of this gear type as a commercial fishing gear type. And so that wasn't an issue. It is a clean gear type, and it does provide a good quality product to the market and all that kind of good stuff. The issues were we were concerned about recreational fishermen using this license as a way of getting around recreational fishing regulations. And that's where all the yelling and all this stuff, we didn't want rich doctors, rich dentists, although we're not that rich, from going out and buying these licenses and just to be able to keep, you know, smaller fish and unlimited. And that was the thing. So we came up with you had to have a certain poundage of seafood sales. And it didn't have to be from hook and line. I mean, we just wanted commercial watermen to have this license, not recreational fishermen. We were worried about illegal charter operations, and that was a big issue, and that was the thing. And so just kind of the stuff talking about, stuff that Stan talked about. And so we tried to come up with ways of limiting that. And so you had a crew list, and you had to put that crew list in advance. And these were recommendations. I don't really know what was actually implemented. These were our recommendations. We had a recommendation of having a big commercial number on the side of your boat, like the king mackerel commercial fisherman, so that anyone could just see that you were a commercial waterman. You weren't. So we made these recommendations to make it a commercial gear type. But it really wasn't because we were worried about commercial watermen. We wanted the commercial waterman. We didn't want me to get your license and use it as a way of getting out of recreational regulations. Billy Tice is probably one of the best flounder fishermen I know, and I understand where he's coming from. But you know, and I could take your position. I could argue both sides of this stuff. And good gosh, did we argue? We argued about it forever. And but what we came up was trying to develop a viable fishery that was kind of a niche fishery, but a viable fishery that hopefully we had enough regulations in to prevent the stuff that Stan was worried about and those kind of things. And so, you know, I come into these meetings almost all the time. I have a bias. I'm biased towards staff recommendation. That's kind of where I'm at. You've got a smart staff. But this is one that, you know, the two guys I mentioned, they're my fishing club. He's my president and he's a board member. But I you know, I'm agreeing with Chris on this one. You know, we hashed this out. And so this is one of these times I'm not going to support staff recommendation.
Further comments?
Yes.
Mr. Zedrin.
You know, there was a comment made about how much money that these people put into their fishery. Well, if you have the kind of boats that Dr. O'Neill and I have, that don't even pay the taxes. But so I don't think it's about that. You know, everybody puts in the money they want to into whatever they want to, whether it's for recreational, whether it's for to add income to your retirement, or do that type of thing. So, you know, I don't think that's important. I think what Dr. O'Neill said is important, is that if the idea was to create a fishery, we should do what we can to support that fishery and, you know, make changes. And you know, I asked a question to staff here a couple of months ago about why is this 14 inches around, you know, for the commercial guys? And then you heard it again today. And it's because that's what they catch out there. And rather than throw all these flounders back, that we're going to let them go with a 14-inch. But that's the same reason why I said a minute ago, why don't we reduce the recreational to 14 inches? And I got the answer, which was the federal agency says, no, it's got to be 16 and a half. So, like I said, I can see both sides of the fence. But when it comes down to you can't do what I'm asking, I'm going to have to support what he says.
One last comment.
Sure.
We limited this fishery to 200 total, possible. And so I'm dang impressed with the percentage of the entire population of commercial hook and liners that are here today. We have a pretty high percentage that have already spoken to us. That shows how important this is to them.
Mr. Ballard?
I think it's pretty clear this isn't an easy issue, and certainly no one wants to see Mr. Tanker's daughter crying, or hook and line fishermen out of work, and I try and get guided by the data when that happens, and I haven't seen the data that really justifies making this change from what is currently the status quo. We've got the percentage of hook and line of summer flounder increasing over the last decade, as well as a back end number that it's the 10% of total harvest is commercial hook and line. But what I'm not seeing is, yes, the percentage of people using hook and line for summer flounder is increasing, but I haven't seen the total pounds and that we're actually taking more from hook and line increasing. And I think if I were to see that, I would be more inclined to vote for this measure. But just kind of the notion that the percentage of it's increasing, well, that also means the percentage of pound net gill net is going down by definition. But what we need to see is an increased taking of the biomass in total with this method being exploited almost is what I'd look to see. And the data, at least in my mind, is not really proving that out to me. So I don't know if we're at motion point or not.
Well, not yet, but we will be. If I can see where this is going, and if I was one of those folks that just said, okay, well, I know where it's going, I'll just keep my mouth shut. I can't do that. It's just not right. I'm of a firm belief that while we're supposed to look at data, we're also supposed to be driven by the law of the Code of Virginia. the conservation aspect of it, when you have a 14-inch fish that can grow to 16.5 inches and has at least 3 years to spawn, to me, makes a difference. Now, I've heard what we said about, oh, it's going to be caught out on the coast. That might very well be true. The quota poundage does go to the coast. I'm not going to debate that. But I still think, from a conservation perspective, that it is a benefit to have a 16-inch minimum fish. The other thing that's never been brought up is these commercial hook and line guys, they can still catch flounder with the commercial hook and line. They just, if you increase the size, you increase the size. Now, I've heard the argument that, well, the 14-inch fish, somebody can afford the 16.5-inch fish, they can't afford. I don't buy that. I don't buy that whatsoever. The other aspect of it is those that went out with a commercial hook, to buy a commercial hook and line, say what you want. There are those out there, and I'm convinced, that bought the commercial hook and line to simply circumvent the recreational limit. There, you can talk to me all day long about that, but I believe that is a problem, that is an issue. The Code of Virginia is specific, and I'll read you the management plan. The commission shall prepare and implement fishery management plans so as to preserve the Commonwealth's exclusive right to manage the fisheries within its territory jurisdiction. Any fishery management plan prepared and any regulation promulgated to implement the plan shall be consistent with the following standards for the fishery conservation and management. Number one, conservation and management measures shall prevent overfishing while achieving the optimum yield for each fishery. The optimum yield of each fishery means the amount of fish or shellfish which shall provide the greatest overall benefit to the Commonwealth, with particular reference to commercial fishing for food production and to recreational fishing. Conservation and management measures shall be based upon the best scientific, economic, biological, and sociological information available. To the extent practicable, an individual stock of fish shall be managed as a unit throughout the territorial waters of the Commonwealth, and interrelated stocks of fish shall be managed as a unit or in close coordination. Conservation and management measures shall not discriminate amongst user groups. If it becomes necessary to allocate or assign fishing privileges amongst various user groups, such allocations shall be, one, fair and equitable to all fishermen, two, reasonably calculated to promote conservation, and three, carried out in a manner that no such person acquires an excessive share of such privileges. I'll entertain a motion.
Yeah, I mean, I think that regulation points out that fair and equitable, man, there you go. And if we're going to conserve, we should be conserving with all fisheries. So I'm moved to accept the staff recommendation.
Is there a second to the motion?
I second it.
Second by Mr. Zedrin. Further discussion?
Yeah, I have a little bit of a legal question. You know, I get that fair and equitable is pretty the same. And so you're applying that to see hook and line fishermen, regardless whether commercial or recreational, have the same size limit. We have different bag limits and that kind of thing. And then I'm holding this letter from Harry Dorenty about would it be legal to differentiate between different gear types in the commercial fishery? So, I mean, is it okay for a pound nutter to keep a 14-inch flounder, or like catch some flounder, where we tell hook and line fisherman he can't keep one until it's 16.5. Or, you know, so I guess using the same language you just read, and so I don't know.
Is this a question for me?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a question for you. So it says we're supposed to treat everyone the same. So are we treating them the same between hook and line, commercial versus recreational, or are we treating them the same between commercial versus commercial different gear types?
So we can read the regulation. Where is that?
It is statute 28.2203. And it's number 4, the relevant language. So in terms of allocating between gear types, and I am not a scientist, I'm an attorney, but what I have been hearing is that the reason we have a smaller limit for pound nets is that there's more, that they catch 14-inch. And so if they bring it on the boat, they don't really have the point of discriminating without having all of this bycatch that doesn't necessarily achieve a conservation purpose. Is that correct?
It's the draggers, offshore draggers. It's not that just they catch all sizes of fish, but because even if you do their mesh size, they catch three big flounder and all the other flounders come up against them. And so it's really it's the draggers that reason we have that 14-inch minimum. And I make sure we have a minimum at all. Because of everything, why are we throwing back 12 inches if they're dead?
It's a higher mortality than trolling fish.
Right. So it's an offshore fishery that really is why we have a low minimum.
Okay. So that makes sense for that gear type? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay. Hook and line, it sounds like that issue is not so much of an issue because there's less mortality. Is this also correct?
Yes.
So in that case, I think 4 Romanet 2 comes in reasonably calculated to promote conservation, and that's one of the factors to consider if it becomes necessary to allocate or assign fishing privileges among various user groups. Now, user groups, getting a bit in the weeds, but bear with me, doesn't seem to distinguish between, oh, can we allocate between gear types versus commercial versus recreational. It seems to indicate if you have to allocate among user groups, whatever those groups may be differentiated by, whether it's differentiated by gear types, by commercial, what have you, you consider these 3 factors. The allocation has to be fair and equitable to all fishermen, reasonably calculated to promote conservation, and carried out in such manner that no person acquires an excessive share of such privileges. So if we're going to allocate among user groups, it has to meet those same, those 3 factors. Does that make sense?
Nope. Back to me. Does it make sense to you?
Yeah,
simply to attorneys.
You got paragraph 6 too. Can I speak?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
It says paragraph 6 of 28.2203 says conservation management measures shall take into account variations among and contingencies in fisheries, fishery resources, and catches. And so that kind of explains the difference as well. It is that why one can do it and one can't. This is a tough one.
It is, and I think.
Thank you.
It's not. I don't think the statute is designed to, like, lock the commission in to some sort of hard line. It's designed to allow us to consider the fishery using these 3 factors.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir, Mr. Zedrin.
I want to ask that. So you know, we do things different sometimes than the Atlantic fisheries and that type of thing. So,
Mr. Gere, come to the podium.
So, you know, like I know, a couple years ago, whatever, they closed the fishery in the federal waters, and we kept it open, and so we were not compliant. So, I'm still going back to my idea. If we switch and instead of taking away from the commercial guys, the 14-inch, what I know if we go to the recreational at 14 inches, we're not compliant. But what detriment will that do to us?
Where do I start? If we don't comply with the ASMSC regulations, we'd be found out of compliance.
And
they can shut our fishery down.
But we could do that when we were not compliant before, right?
We were not compliant before. We didn't go against ASMFC. We went against the feds. We really didn't have jurisdiction here at all. It was the South Atlantic Fisheries Management Group. He's talking about COPIA.
And if they shut the fishery down, it's not just that component. It's the entire, flounder would be shut down completely, commercially, recreationally, everything.
All right. Further questions?
No, I don't have a question. I just find, like, as you mentioned in 28.2-203, that in point 4, the third part of it, carried out in such a manner that no person acquires an excessive share of such privileges, speaks for itself.
So
Mr. France?
So what we're saying here is that the one fishery is discriminated over the other one. Is that what we're saying?
That's what seems to be.
That's what I'm saying that the code says. And I just, as I said before, we're not taking away the ability of a commercial hook and liner to catch flounder for a living. We're not.
Yes, you are. Absolutely.
It's enough. I've been very fair and quiet in where we're discussing it. That's what I'm saying.
Would you read them?
We can.
5, 6, and 7 and 28, 2, 2, 3.
Kelly, please. You're out of order. You've been out of order several times today, and I haven't gaveled you down. You've been raising your hand. You've been opening your mouth. You're out of order. And if you do one more time, I ask you to be removed. That's it. That's enough.
I apologize.
Thank you. I think it's probably time to... I can't call the question, but...
You have a motion and a second.
You do.
So you can call the vote, I guess.
Any further discussion? Mr. France? Roll call vote.
No.
Mr. Tankard?
Aye.
Mr. Zedrin?
Aye.
Mr. Neal?
No.
Mr. Ballard?
No.
Mr. Miner's absent. Ms. Lusk?
No.
Ms. Everett?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion fails on a tie. Thank you all very much. Any further business to come before the commission? If not, meeting adjourned.